All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Yo Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We're all in studio for the PGA picks later this afternoon.
Yes.
The PGA Championship. I just saw a big bet came in on Tiger Woods earlier today in a book down in Vegas. We'll tell you about that a little bit later on. Big scratch, and I'm hearing whispers from people on the ground that Eldrick is looking like himself again.
Dude, that's such nonsense. What are they going to say? Oh, he looks terrible out there.
Well, he was laboring at Augusta, and it looks like he's walking a lot better. He looks like he's more in shape. Swing speed is
jacked.
There. He looks good.
He looks jacked.
Tiger looks good.
You went against him yesterday, did you not?
I don't know if I went against
him.
Making
the cut, wasn't it?
No, he said he would make the cut. O's on Tiger not making the cut. I said he'll make the cut.
Let me just clarify one thing, okay? What I said yesterday does not have any influence or impact on what happens today.
So how does that make sense?
I don't care. You were George Brett yesterday.
See, the thing is, I don't think he's going to make the cut, but I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I don't pick him on my team. It's one of those things.
Well, maybe
sometimes...
Maybe
as you've said in the past, Hazy B, two things can be true.
Yes, at times, two things can be true. So we'll see if you get the opportunity to pick Tiger Woods. I don't remember who has the first pick. You had Scheffler at the Masters, so you won that one. Does that mean I get first pick? I mean, the
graphic can
determine that.
You can have first pick. I don't even care.
You know what's crazy is that Scottie Scheffler, no one's talking about him. Nobody. The guy's the number one player in the world. All he does is win.
Grappler, Hayes had first pick last week. Therefore, I'll go first
pick.
Wasn't
that a goat trail?
Yeah, that doesn't
last
count. That's the Byron Nelson. The Rick Nelson.
That was the Tam O'Shanton.
Yeah.
Okay, Grapp, come up with a golf trivia question to see who gets it right. And then that's who gets first pick.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Let's do it, man. We'll come up with a ruling on your career best round from this morning. And we'll let the people decide. And if the ruling sides with me, then I get first peg.
I'll let
if
the grappler
decide.
Grappler, here's what happened. And Noodles, you seem like you would be a smart rules official.
I'd be one of those guys.
Who just said, look, this is the rule.
Sergio.
On my card today, I had five birdies, and I dunked one on 17 for a two, an eagle. 7 under, 65. Career best before was 66. But there was an infraction on the sixth hole, and I had to tell Hazy B because I had to be straight up with it.
Did you Donald Trump it?
No. You could just imagine a guy like Chaser if this happened to him or something.
A fist fight.
No. I hit a 3-iron off the tee. It's a short hole. It bounces 2-3 times on the fairway, and there's a little ledge where there's just grass below it.
Yeah.
And it dribbles into the grass.
Yeah.
Up comes a guy in a monster John Deere, and he cuts my golf ball into 6,000 pieces, and it disappears off the face of the universe. So this guy's cutting my ball up. It flies into, I don't know, it just
space.
Disappears.
It's happened to me.
So I just said I'm taking a par on this hole.
Well, no.
Why don't you
just put your ball where
exactly.
The guy mowed it?
It's a free drop. It's a free drop because that's happened to me before. It's a free drop within range of where you believe it was. There's no rules official actually staking it out.
Fine, there's more to the story.
What hole was this again?
There's more to the story.
Six. I know this hole,
okay.
Too.
I put one down and skanked it in the bunker. I said, piss on it. I'm taking a par. I'm not letting this guy rattle.
That's a double bogey. That's a double bogey 67.
I have to be honest.
It's a double 67.
Why didn't you just take a drop where the guy mowed it over?
He did, and then he sprayed it into the bunker and blamed the guy.
I was striping it like a tour pro, and it was right down the middle, and I played the course a zillion times, and guys started pissing me off. They're like, maybe it hit a sprinkler head and went into the gunch, and I'm like, no, it didn't. So then I threw one down and I skanked it, and I'm like,
Are you sure there was a guy with a lawnmower and ran it over?
We saw the guy. We all confirmed a guy with a lawnmower chewed this golf ball.
That has happened to me before. Now, I found the evidence. My golf ball had been literally cut in half.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I know in my heart of hearts, if I had have just focused and said, okay, I got to place one down here, I could have grinded.
It's a tough hole. Pin in the back left, like you said, over the bunker, downhill line, a bad rough. I don't know. That feels like probably a bogey
Dude,
for
I'm
you.
Dude, I'm taking a 65. I'm not
right.
saying anything.
Take
about
a 65.
You're asking me the rules official. I feel like you should have just played it out. And, you know, can you get mad at the guy who's cutting lawn? He's just
no,
working, right?
Not his
like,
fault.
That's his job.
That means he must have been playing at, like, 7 in the morning. If you're catching up to everyone out there mowing the lawn.
Yeah, it was 7 in the morning. But my partner made a 4. I'm like, we're 4. We're 4.
Well, you can't just make things up, though. That's the thing. You have to actually, like,
I didn't take a 9 on 18 that day.
That's what he's...
I actually...
Took a 10.
No, I was going to... play by his rule book and say I took a birdie, so I actually ended up shooting a 74 that day. Career round. No. If we're just making up numbers, but no.
It sounds like it was a career round.
It sounds like it
but
was.
But
it's
it
a
went
65 with an it's Barry Bonds. It's an asterisk.
Okay.
Is there somewhere where
Raps,
you take
what do you think?
A reasonable like, drop? Like
be,
maybe
be reasonable here.
Yeah, oh yeah. You can take a drop, like
I don't know. I'm generally, you know, when I'm playing golf, I like to put down the score that's going to make me feel the best. So, if you want to give yourself a 65, give yourself the 65.
There you go. That's a man that lacks integrity on a golf course, giving you support to do the same thing. So, 65, that's a career round. That's a great round. That's a great round.
I mean,
and you got jammed up by a guy in a John Deere. You can't,
let's
nothing you can do about
let's
that.
Let's say it went south and you took a 5 and, what was it, a par 4?
Yeah.
You took a 5 or 6, you'd still be at 67, 68. Like, that's
a great round.
That's an
great
unbelievable round.
I know the feeling of a career round and something going south. I know the feeling.
The sick thing was I missed a 5-foot putt for birdie on 18 for 64.
Mm-hmm. That's one you'll never forget.
Wow.
You'll never forget that. Even though it's the best round of your life, you'll never forget puking over a 5-footer on 18. It's a sick sport. It's disgusting, really. I don't know why we play it. I don't know why we enjoy it, but we do. PGA Championship, our boy Graham DeLette is down there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Southern Hills, and Tiger Woods is going off at 60-1. Someone bet $20,000 on Tiger to win the tournament.
Wow.
At a book down in Vegas and is paying 60-1.
Wow.
So those are big odds. Yeah, when I cashed that future on Tiger, it was 15-1, which I wasn't complaining because he won, and it was in 19, and he was still in his, you know, good spot going into that tournament. I think that's reasonable odds. I mean, he's not expected to really compete, let alone win. 60-1, that puts him in like the Max Homa range, kind of like good players, a bunch of good players around there.
Well,
but
he looks in good shape.
Like, he looks like he's okay.
Like he looks jacked.
Yeah. Wow. You know he works out. Like, you know he's putting in the effort to make sure that he's in a good place.
Yeah.
So we'll catch up with Graham later this afternoon. We will have our picks for the PGA Championship. We will determine who gets the first pick. The Jays are back in action tonight looking for the sweep on Seattle, and they got their man on the mound, Kevin Gausman, after Barrios had himself a great outing last night. And the Springer triple, it was a fluky triple, but those are the most entertaining plays in baseball. Like, I was watching that, and I'm thinking, this is what baseball needs more. You need action on the bases. Like, it's too much either home run, strikeout, walk, strikeout.
Because they're too good. You watch college baseball. It's like college basketball. There's more mistakes, therefore it's more entertaining. They're too good.
And that's really what it was.
Yeah.
It was a defensive mistake that cleared the bases. But Springer, like, he came out of the box hot, so he was rounding first. He was thinking, I'm taking third here. And there was a play at third. Like, a play at third on a triple, a play at home. Those are the most entertaining plays in baseball. You have action.
Yeah.
Right? Like, as fun as a home run is, once it's off the bat, you know the outcome. But a triple that cleared the bases last night, that's all the runs they needed. That's as fun as it gets, man. Like, if you're live watching that develop, it's the best part of baseball.
One thing I have
is action.
I love when Barrios leaves. He tips the cap to the fans. It's like, I can't stand when a pitcher, everyone is standing up cheering for them, and they don't even acknowledge it. It's just like, can you just, like a golf little tip of the cap? He takes the cap off and says, thank you very much. I like that.
What would be your move walking from the...
Same thing.
Like a little...
tip of the cap, maybe a wave. I don't know. Just don't walk
Thumbs
to the...
up.
Walk to the dugout, and it's like they're not even there. I think that's so ignorant. I don't know why. I don't know if it's some code in baseball, but at least this guy acknowledges the fans. You've had to have seen pitchers just walk and do nothing.
But what do you do when you've had a rough outing?
They don't cheer for you, trust me.
Yeah, but they're chirping you. You pretend like you don't hear.
Oh, you got
like
to.
Like a Bronx cheer? Yeah, like if you're in the zone, we've had this discussion before. If it's a guy that is walking off at the end of an inning and doesn't want to allow his manager to believe that he's ready to come out of the game,
right,
then maybe you don't acknowledge the crowd. But if you are leaving knowing that you're out or you get pulled from the game, you might as well acknowledge them like they're giving you love.
Right.
And that's what happened last night. Like, he gets pulled, and obviously he's in a position where he's pitching really, really well, and the crowd loves him for it. Yeah, a little tip of the cap. There's
nothing
wrong with
that. It's good, you want him to give love. When it's bad, just do your walk. Because there are people chirping. I've sat there when a guy's had a tough outing, and they'll be like, sit your ass down.
Right, but you're not going to tip the cap for that.
But you pretend like you don't hear them. That's the thing. So you've got to be consistent with your walk. You're saying don't be consistent. When it's good, thumbs up.
Yeah, obviously.
When it's not, pretend they don't exist.
What would you want them to do if you get blown up? Like opening day, Barrios couldn't get out of the first inning.
Right.
And what's he supposed to do there?
But that's the thing. I think they want to be consistent with that walk.
Well, when you're getting touched up out there, you can't do anything. Because if you're a smartass and want to do a smartass David Wells move, they'll hate your guts.
Well, did you see the other day was, I think it was yesterday or the day before that, it was the anniversary of David Wells throwing that perfect game.
You know what I want to see? I think it was Cito went out to get David Wells and he chucked the baseball down the third baseline.
Yeah, they had a lot of issues.
He was so pissed off. We got to try to find that.
Bauer do that a couple of years ago? He threw it in the outfield.
Yeah, in the outfield.
And then the manager got in his grill.
Oh, yeah.
That
happens not a lot, but like there was the famous Ted Lilly, John Gibbons dust up, like towards the clubhouse where Lilly wouldn't give him the ball. Gibbons went out to get him, wouldn't give him the ball, and you could see Lilly was like chirping Gibby, Gibby was giving it like a, you better give me that ball. I will kill you right here. And so Lilly finally gave it up and walked off, and Gibby had to wait for the reliever to come out.
Yeah.
And like, John Gibbons does not do anything fast.
No.
He got off that field pretty quickly because he was going to look for Lilly.
Yeah, he was going to tune him up.
And then all of a sudden, all hell broke loose because, remember, all the teammates realized, like, they're throwing bombs in there or something. And everyone started running down towards
the
clubhouse, down the tunnel, because they knew it was coming. Like, they knew Lilly and Gibbons. And Lilly had to come out, and it was like a full-blown mea culpa. He's like, that's on me. Can't do it. Like, if you get pulled from the game, you got to leave the game. Like, I understand your juices are there. I understand that you want a chance at redemption, or maybe you feel like you have more in the tank. And I think it's more difficult for starting pitchers because you're only out there every 5 days.
Right.
Like, that's your day, and you take pride in the idea of actually getting the job done.
Yeah.
But when the skipper comes out to get you, you got to go. You're never going to win that battle.
No.
Like, he's already made up his mind. The reliever's coming in. You're out.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that the other day with Jack Campbell.
I know.
You know, Sheldon was negotiating with him or whatever, saying, get it, you're done.
Like, yeah.
Game four?
That was game four. That was the blow-up game four.
But it happens. Yep. I don't mind the emotion of it, but if there's a routine to it, you got to accept it.
Like I guess, Jamie, everybody's different, but I prefer just the big boys, the big leagues, man. Just
get off the ice,
and you're not playing the rest of the way.
That one, I, you know my feeling on that. I hated that. I thought that was optics. I think it looked bad. You know, to me, Jack Campbell's a battler. I would never question. If he skated right off and put a ball cap on or went down the alley to compose himself a little bit, like, guys are ultra competitive. But, you know, I think you also have to look at the scenario, too. Shalgren's not a grizzled vet backup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a power play and then potential 5-on-2. Like, there was a lot going on at that point.
So do you think Campbell was trying to protect him almost?
He might have been like, let me finish the period here. And, you know, you can put the kid in the third. That might have been. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here.
Still, get the hell off the ice.
Well, it was five goals on 15 shots. And you weren't having a night. And nobody on the bench was having a night. It was just an off night that night.
Yeah.
But, you know, the optics of it, again, comes back to you're into it with the manager. You're into it with the coach. Not good optics.
Well, speaking of optics, the grappler got caught up in this earlier. He was not alone. This was trending online today, a picture of Luka Doncic out for lunch and drinking beer. And they're playing tonight. They're in the Bay Area tonight playing game one against the Warriors. Now, the time check alone should have allowed people to realize it didn't happen today.
Grappler went all Odesk on this one.
The Pacific time zone is 3 hours removed. Like, this thing was posted online at, like, noon. So what, Luka's out at 9 a.m. drinking beer somewhere? I don't think so. But the picture is amazing. There it is. I think TMZ was the original one that posted that. And then the Mavericks actually reached out to TMZ and said, that's an old picture. But the amazing thing about this picture, if you're watching on TSN4, is not that Luka is drinking a beer, which if it was happening on a game day in the playoffs, I would have so much respect for him. And if he went legend tonight,
exactly,
then immediately GOAT status. Move aside Jordan, LeBron, Luka's the king of the NBA, and the logo should be changed to that picture of him holding a beer.
Right.
What's I find much more fascinating about that picture is Boban is sitting with him. Look at the size of this guy's hand.
The mutant with him. Yeah, the guy's hand.
It looks like the lunatic in Happy Gilmore in the crowd.
Yeah, yes.
Jaws.
Yeah, right, he's got a nail in his head. A nail in his head. Yeah. Look at the size of Boban's hand.
I'll see you in the parking lot.
Could you imagine going into a bar with Boban? That guy, I believe he's like 7'4", 7'3", or 7'4". How could you possibly think it was going to be indiscreet?
He looks like he's handing him a batch of bananas.
Yeah.
Like that. Look at how big his fingers are.
Just a massive human being. Boban. 7'4". Like,
he's
you
huge.
Could never be incognito with that guy. Ever.
We were talking off air. I think Milan Lucic is buddies with him, and there's a picture of the two of them together, and Lucic looks like Al's brother. Like, tiny.
He looks, yeah, I don't know about Al's brother, but
okay.
He looks
shorter.
Very small.
Yes.
He looks very, very small in that picture. Like, Boban is 7'4", 290.
Wow. And Lucic is like 6'3", 230.
He's a monster human being himself.
And
like, if Lucic walked in anywhere, everyone would notice that.
Exactly.
But Boban at 7'4", 290 can never, ever be incognito. Like, there is nowhere on earth he can go where there are people around where people are not going to look at him and say, there's Boban. There's the picture right there.
He's got a huge head on.
He's up to his nipples.
Yes.
Like, Milan Lucic is the biggest mutant in the National Hockey League, and he looks like Johnny Gaudreau
that's
up against Boban.
It's Johnny standing next to Lucic.
Exactly.
Standing next to Boban.
But when I saw the pic, I so desperately wanted it to be accurate. There it is, up on TSN4. There's Lucic and Boban. But the idea of him having drinks on a game day would just be, wouldn't it be the best?
You know,
like,
what?
It would just be such a throwback.
Are you kidding me? That would be so many problems for him.
Why, though, if he plays well tonight and he
Jordan
keeps rolling?
Didn't Jordan do that?
Jordan absolutely did that.
I get it, but it's not 1993. It's
This guy
would be facing questions from the organization. What are you doing drinking beers on game day? Like, it would just.
I don't think so. I don't. Yeah.
Dude, you think
he's got too much leverage?
You think if let's say he was going out for beers today, and he went out and was unbelievable tonight, and that picture was true, and he was at lunch having beers, don't you think that he would have to face? Like, he would
absolutely
just,
not. But he shouldn't.
Yeah, he's a pretty funny guy, right?
He's an adult.
He's got a good personality, right? Like,
yeah.
I swear, if he goes legend tonight, I want him in his post game to say, actually, that picture was true.
Me too, man.
I want him to say that.
Again, it's not true. He's not drinking day of. But if he were this whole time and he had been playing the way he's been playing, why would you not say, go ahead, keep doing whatever you've been doing? Like, having one beer over lunch doesn't mean he's getting dragged out of there by Boban at 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
like he's having. If you have a beer or something, like I get it because we live in this sensitive society with how dare you not drinking shakes and sleeping in the afternoon. But what if he's a throwback or any athlete's a throwback and they're like, I can still perform. Like, I don't need to run it by you. I didn't ask to have someone take my picture.
I guarantee.
I'm just out having
guys
lunch.
That knock back a couple of beers at home.
100%.
I guarantee.
100%.
The only thing I've ever allegedly come across would be guys drinking till very late. So you put them to bed at you know, they have their last drink at 5:30 in the morning and be like, hey, we got morning skate at 10. Like, get a couple hours.
So what's the difference?
Pour them into their bed, and you get a couple hours. You wake them up. You bring them to morning skate. You get a lather. And then you put them back into bed for four hours that afternoon, and they're fine that night. Now, I witnessed it.
Yeah. And I think that was more of an old school approach,
right?
Probably as well. But
the greasiest one, which is the highest level of veteran status, is for the gentleman that took it deep for an afternoon game.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some cross-eyed people at pregame meal at 8 in the morning, and it's like, did you go out last night? Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? what sport is most famous for that is baseball.
Well, baseball,
they play every single day. I know, I have seen it myself when I used to go downtown, you know, a lot, like in my 20s and stuff. I'd see Blue Jays down there. I'd see opposing players down there. And I used to work with someone who said he saw a pitcher. He was at an after-hours place, like somewhere on Spadina. Yeah. He's like, I was in there gooned at 4:30 in the morning, and here's this pitcher. And he was on the mound for a 12:37 start the next day at the Dome.
Yeah.
And he said he pitched like a three-hitter through seven innings and was money. Like, yeah. Had a great outing, and, like, guy probably just goes out all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the way he operates. But imagine, like, knock three times, backdoor Spadina joint at 4:30 in the morning. You're like, that guy's on the mound in 8 hours.
Yeah.
On the mound in the majors in 8 hours. And pitching
a
job.
There's hackers and slashers that can't break 100 if they don't get 10 hours sleep.
I know. Well, listen, the David Wells story we just referenced. Yeah. He said he was out the night before.
Yeah.
That was a day game.
Nobody has ever been more hungover than me, is his quote, and I just pitched a perfect
game. That was a day game.
So he was buckled
on. Go find that out, Grappler. Like, find out when the first pitch was, but I'm pretty sure when he closed out, it was like I think Paul O'Neill caught it in right field. The sun was still out. Like, it was like
30 in
heaven. It was like a nice day in New York. And what did he do after the game?
Why did you go home and sleep? No, or you just doubled down?
After a perfect game, there's no way he didn't go out.
Dude, I'm telling you.
He was the king of New York.
I would buy this book. There's a book out there for amazing performances after massive nights. David Wells is Exhibit A. You start with that, and there's probably guys that when they retire, they'd actually tell the truth.
I think it'd be the greatest book ever written in
sports.
See,
I scored a hat trick at Madison Square Garden, and I was out till 9 in the morning.
We have
crushed.
We have our
pea soup.
Our idol came on this show and told us the story. Like, yeah. Dougie told us the story.
7 points or six assists.
Six assists. Doug, like, we had Doug Gilmore right over there.
Sitting
Dougie said.
Right, like pea soup, wasn't
he's like,
it?
Yeah, it was a game day. And because remember, he was out the night before.
Yeah. He had a tuna fish sandwich and some pea soup.
Yeah, and went out there and had six assists against Dallas, I think it was, the Gardens. Career night.
That's a book.
There's a Doug Gilmore chapter. A David Wells chapter, among so many others.
Yeah.
Like Jordan would have his own chapter.
There would be.
Of him drinking, you know, like 25 beers day of a game. Like, that's the famous story when he was playing Cleveland, I think it was.
Yeah, but think of the ones we don't know. Like,
I know.
Like game 7 of the finals, and some guy just had to take the nerves off and blow off some steam, as you like to say.
Yep.
And got crushed and scored 2 goals in it. Like, who knows what's out
there? They're out there.
Yeah,
that would be, I think, the best-selling sports book of all time. It would be certainly a top five.
There are legends. I mean, think of where I grew up and that young core. And
the
cups.
Oilers back in the day.
Oh,
those
yeah.
Boys on the bus. Like, you know.
Think about Babe Ruth. What do you think Babe Ruth was doing?
Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle every night in
like
New York.
That back then, that was probably
it was.
The norm,
the
right?
86 Mets are faint. Like, that wasn't just taking it deep. That was, like, crazy stuff, was going on with the 86 Mets.
Yeah.
Like, that's almost, like, too dark and extreme. We want something like, hey, we're just having a great time and got away from me, and next thing you know, I'm out there and pitching a perfect game.
I used to sit with Grant Fear, the back of the plane in St. Louis. And, he sat beside, it was myself and Pronger, and Fierzy was right behind us. You get a long flight, have a couple beers. Like, I would beg for stories from those heydays. And, once in a while, he'd share a few. You're just, you're in awe. Because I grew up watching, he was one of my favorite players.
Right.
Like, just watching him. And
are we talking, like, during the playoffs? It was like, a night off in between series.
Like, it was famous. He talked about golfing. I think it was game 7. He shot 51 holes that morning. It was that? 3 rounds, right? Like, that's
almost impossible. Unless you're
three times.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't go to morning skate, no nothing, just went out and golfed. Like, that was his routine. I don't know, like, do you walk the course? You probably
carted. No, there's no way. You can't play that fast. To play that fast, like, you would need to be so clean off the tee, hitting every green. Anything within 10 feet, you pick up and you walk.
Yeah, he must. I mean, who knows?
I don't know, but
that would be the longest round ever.
Ever. Especially with game 7 that night. I mean, that's a guy without a pulse. That's the guy who's always ready to play.
I've seen one guy played with Go Legend. It was rookie party in Los Angeles. Got Vanna White's bird. Went to Vegas all night. Got the bird back in LAX because our hotel was right there. Couldn't even stand up for practice. And he said, don't even think about it. I'm not coming to Sherwood Country Club to golf after practice. This guy, by the end of this, he would have slept on the side of the road. The road.
Yeah.
We said, you're not coming golfing. And he said, I'm golfing.
That's a legend.
William just wrote to me, I forgot about this. Was it Doc Ellis, the pitcher?
Yeah.
Who admitted to being
LSD
like
or something,
LSD.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy, man. Well, and a lot of people are pointing out our old friend Wade Boggs. We haven't brought up Wade Boggs on the show in years, but
I'll never forget that sign at college football. I was on a flight from Boston to LA, and Wade Boggs had 54 beers.
Yeah.
That's where the whole thing came, because somebody said, we got to find out if this is true.
Yeah. Someone claimed that Wade Boggs, on a trip from Boston to L.A., drank something like 108
beers. But Wade Boggs came clean, and he told the story. He's like, yeah, I had 15 in the clubhouse after the game. We got to the airport. I had 25 on the plane. Then I got to L.A., and I had 13 more when I got
there. Yeah, like he broke it down. He did the analytics for it.
Yeah.
The metrics.
Yeah. He just never stopped drinking beers for basically like 20
hours. We got to get him on to talk about that story.
Yeah, we have to. We
that would
have
be
to.
The greatest get ever.
All right, Steve Phillips coming up. I'll bet you Steve's got some interesting stories he might be able to hook us up with. Jordan Romano is dealing with a gastrointestinal infection. That's not good. So the Blue Jays do not expect an IL stint to be needed, but clearly he will not be available tonight. You got Gausman on the mound. We'll get into that more. And Buster Olney with an interesting little comment on the morning show this morning. We'll play it. We'll get into it with Phillips. Battle of Alberta tonight. We'll tee that up throughout the afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Rick Tockett will join us in just over half an hour. Going to fire up some arbitration today at 5:30.
Ooh.
Yeah, we haven't done that in a while.
Love it.
So we're getting very creative. It feels like a creative time of year.
Sure.
And the Jays have won two straight. Barrios pitching very well last night. Kikuchi pitched really well the night before. Now you got Gausman going tonight, looking for the sweep. And to chat about that, amongst many other things, we're joined now by our TSN MLB and Blue Jay analyst here, Steve Phillips. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. We were just having a conversation about the anniversary of David Wells and his perfect game and how he admitted that he was out the night before and was so hungover. And it got us talking about all these different stories in sports history of players that would be out the night before a big game. How often during your days of being a GM were you aware of your players possibly doing that, whether it was for a home game, a road game? And if you came across that information, how would you handle that?
So, you know, I will tell you that more often than not, players are pretty close-mouthed about that stuff. Now, every once in a while when we would travel to Montreal, I would hear them say team meeting at a certain location there. And I guess I figured they weren't talking baseball. But
no.
I got to tell you that I didn't get the sense of it very much. And we had a lot of veteran players that were, David Wells was a unique cat. I mean, he was a little different guy. But it got to the point that most players had a level of respect for their teammates, the game. And when your star players are guys who toe the line, then, you know, you don't worry too much. Like, so I had Mike Piazza, and I never had to worry about Mike Piazza. I mean, after the game, he would drink Gatorade and eat power bars and protein bars. And everything was in moderation, was sort of the way he looked at it. Now Leiter was a leader on the team, and John Franco. And so, you know, they all had fun, but they all understood, you know, the nature of the game and what they needed to do. So I didn't really have to deal with that too much. I know that I guess the one time we flew over and started the season in Japan, I was a little worried about that just because of the jet lag factor and everything else with guys going out, how it would impact them. But, you know, we split the two game series and we came back and went on to the World Series that year. So, I would say that generally speaking, unless I thought there was a problem with somebody where they had some issue off the field, I tended to keep my head down and not mess with the guys because I respected that they cared about the team and the game, and more often than not, I think they showed up in a pretty good state to be able to perform.
Steve, in the NHL, there's like a mandatory, I think teams set a curfew to cover their own asses, and they said you should have been in your hotel room at 11. Was there anything like that, or was it just honor system in baseball?
Yeah, I think that you know, it depended. You know, but I think most managers, it was, you know, like Davey Johnson with the Mets forever said, I only have two rules. Don't be late and be ready to play. And if you can do that, then I don't care what else you do. And, you know, I think some teams put curfews in place. Now, one of the things I did do was I banned alcohol, and this did not go over well, but I took alcohol out of the clubhouse after games. Because I didn't want to provide alcohol, then have somebody drive home, and have an accident, and be like, well, we're the ones who gave him alcohol, so why would we do that? And then even on return flight, I because I didn't want to have guys fly across the country, drink all the way, and then get in their car and drive home. That didn't seem right. So, you know, it was met initially with like, you know, why are we doing it? I just said, listen, liability, man, insurance. I mean, the way the world is today, I can't do that to the organization. And it's not the right thing for me to do. Now, it doesn't mean that they didn't have somebody, you know, grab some beers and put them in a brown paper bag and bring them on the airplane. And I knew there was some of that. But it did set the tone for understanding that there's got to be some moderation in everything that takes place.
Do you think Wade Boggs would have demanded a trade immediately if he was on your team?
Yeah. As long as we had chicken for him, I think he was okay, because he's okay. One of those guys that was superstitious. He had chicken before every game, in every game, because, you know, and look, it worked for him. He got 3,000 hits. But, you know, there were guys, you know what it was is, you know, the old times, players would sit around the clubhouse and drink beer all night. And you know, that was kind of the way it was. And here's the reality of it, that they drank beer because they needed to come down from the amphetamines that they had taken. And that's why so many baseball players, alcoholism was somewhat rampant in baseball, was guys would take amphetamines, and then after the game they would drink in order to come down from the amphetamines. And then what would happen is the next day, because they drank so much, they'd have to take more amphetamines. And then they'd have to drink more to come back. And it became this vicious cycle. And so, you know, and I just was not going to play into that. And, you know, now we know that amphetamines are banned in baseball, and they test for it, although they didn't for the longest time. And when I was general manager, they didn't. And, you know, and I will say that when I was general manager, I heard players say in the clubhouse, if you need them, get them. If you have them, share them. And I, first I was like, oh, I wonder what that means. And I'm like, oh, okay, I think I know what it means. Is that,
yeah.
And then, you know, you'd see guys taking cups of coffee and swish them back and forth between two cups, trying to dissolve, you know, something within their coffee. So, you know, and here's the thing. It, back then, there was no testing for it. And, you know, it's funny, when they banned amphetamines in baseball, there were former players who said they're going to have to shorten the season to 120 games. Because it's not humanly, physically possible to play the game without that. Now, obviously, that's not true, and players are doing it. But, you know, when they banned amphetamines in baseball, the prescriptions from doctors for Ritalin went up 250%. That because players wanted something to get their focus, and so they then went to doctors to get prescriptions written, which was then legal as long as you had a written prescription from doctors. So, you know, guys would do things to get an edge. Guys would do things, you know, some because they needed it, but it was, you know, it was a pretty big issue. I mean, back in the 70s, that stuff was in the clubhouse. I mean, doctors would bring in jugs of amphetamines in clubhouses. Now, it got dramatically cleaned up, and it was hidden more than that. And, but I, you know, I mean, I remember acquiring a player who had some suspension for drug use before, and he was getting tested, and he said to me, he said he was an older player. He said, "Hey kid, I can't play without my beans. I need my beans. Can you call somebody?" And then he'd come into the training room with a pill and say to the doctor, "Hey doc, what is this?" And the doctor would say, "Well, where'd you get it?" He said, "But don't worry about where I got it. What is it? Can I take it?" And the doctor's like, "I don't even know what it is. Like, it's a pill. Like, I have no idea what it is."
Right.
And so there was, you know, that it was. guys trying to gain advantages. And, you know, they've done a lot to clean the game up that way.
Oh, for sure. With Steve Phillips. So we were talking about the Springer triple last night, and a lot of that had to do with mistakes in the outfield. You know, it was a bloop single. It probably should have scored a run, maybe two. It turns into a triple, and I credit Springer for getting out of the box quick, and then by the time he was around at first, he had triple in his eyes, and he went for it, and it was a play at third. And to me, those are the most exciting plays in baseball. You know, a play in the second, third, a play at home is, in my opinion, the most exciting play in baseball. And you just don't see it that often. How much of it is based on you just don't see mistakes enough at the major league level to allow for that kind of activity on the base paths? Because I think that's what's needed when we talk about where the game is going and the effect of the shift, et cetera. We need more life on the bases, and we saw it last night.
Yeah, what happens is because it's such a home run-based game, you know, the running of the bases has become less of an issue because guys trot around the bases now,
right.
You know, and you don't see the single to left field or the double in the gap of the guy trying to score from first base because everybody's trying to hit the ball over the wall. Now, you know, the ball's not traveling quite as far, and so maybe we're going to start to see that more. I also think the other thing next year, when they make the bases bigger, you know, they're talking about making them instead of 15 inches, making them 18 inches. And when you think about that, the stolen base is going to become much more of a factor. Speed, because you know, when you're on first base, you're going to be 4.5 inches closer to second base. The 3 inches off first and an inch and a half off second, 4.5 inches, you know what that's like? Think about all the bang-bang plays on stolen bases that we see today. It's going to dramatically change the way bases get run. And so I do think that we're, you know, next year going to see a lot more action on bases with base stealing, which is going to have all elements of the game. And it brings the speed player back into the mix instead of the home run hitter, which I think will give us more of that base running excitement that we really all really missed from the past.
With Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB and Blue Jay analyst. So Buster Olney was on with First Up this morning, and Buster had been writing about Juan Soto, the new ownership down in Washington that could be on the horizon and what it means for Soto and his future. And here's what he had to say about what a rival GM had told him in terms of Soto and where he could end up if a trade were to ever happen.
But the other day I had an interesting conversation with a rival executive who's all over the trade market, and he mentioned the name of Juan Soto, who is, you know, he is this generation's version of Ted Williams in terms of how great he is. And he goes, you know, the Nationals are going to have to deal with the situation sooner rather than later.
So he went on to mention that the Padres and the Blue Jays were the two teams he was hearing. You didn't hear it in that clip. But does that make sense to you? If Soto became available, how do the Blue Jays make that work?
Well, I mean, they'd have to put Gabby Moreno and, you know, or Elvis Martinez and, you know, arms back in the deal. And, I mean, it would take a mega deal. So now here's the thing. Soto is not going to sign before becoming a free agent. You know, Scott Boras is his guy. You know, they got offered $350 million and didn't even counter it with a proposal. They just want to wait and play it out. And so, you know, whomever gets him will, you know, may have a chance to sign him. And yet, you know, unless you have the biggest offer on the table when it all comes down to it for Juan Soto, you're not going to get him. So I'm not sure trading for him is necessarily the right thing because, you know, you're going to give up all the prospects and then you're going to have to give them the money too. I might as well just wait and give them the money and keep the prospects because I'm going to need them to play with Juan Soto and pay them if I'm going to sign him as a free agent. So it's going to be an interesting one. You know, it's going to be Scott Boras, you know, doing his thing and trying to maximize the market. And, you know, it will be all free agency. And there will be opt-outs all over the contract and you know, escalators in the deal. And so, you know, I just look at it and think, I don't need to have the highest-paid player to win. You know, and how often does the team with the highest-paid player actually win? We saw the Texas Rangers do it with A-Rod back in the day. And it didn't prove, you know, they ended up getting rid of him because they couldn't win that way. And so, I don't know. I love Juan Soto, but you know, look, he's on the Nationals right now. They're not winning anything because one guy can't do it. I'd rather have two $25 million players instead of one $50 million player. Yeah. Just because, you know, I just don't see paying somebody $50 million and that the production, he's going to be better than everybody else, but not worth the extra $30 million over a $20, $25 million player.
Two quick things. Happy birthday. Heard a vicious rumor about that.
Yes. Yeah,
happy
thanks birthday, so much. Yeah, but I tell you, feeling old, man. Feeling old today.
We're all getting there, but I know we don't have much time, but I wanted, you just mentioned Scott Boras. Is he, when you're a GM, is he an intimidating guy? Is somebody that, you know, GMs are afraid of, or do they welcome the battle to, you know, kind of get a deal with his clients?
I think he's one of the easier guys to negotiate with, at least for me, because I don't play the game of chase. I just go to where I think the value is, and then I stop. And so, because, you know, there's always the secret team, the mystery team that's in. There's always the, you know, these teams are in, and they might be willing to go to this level. And I'm like, well, then I'm not going to pretend to chase it, because every time I've heard A-Rod, back in the day, Kevin Brown, teams weren't within $20 million, $40 million of the final offer, and those teams chased a ghost. And so I was never going to be in a position to do that. I would say, this is the value I have for your player. This is what I'm willing to do. If it doesn't work, great, then let him go somewhere else. But I think you have to be really rigid with your boundaries with Scott.
Happy birthday, Steve. Thank you for doing this, buddy.
No, my pleasure, guys. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB and Blue Jay analyst.
And?
Birthday boy.
Birthday boy?
Yep.
You're loving that clip.
I was just going to say that.
That's
clip.
The first time we've been back here where I...
He threw a dagger.
That was a nasty head shake. That was a death stare, a head shake, a hand.
We talked about the clip 15 times today.
No, you played the clip. Unfortunately, the most important part of the clip.
I know. It lacked the mention of the J's.
Can we just hear the clip, the normal clip, so we can hear it just for peace of mind?
Well, let's keep in mind how I set it up. I'm like, he was talking to a rival exec, and all of it's everything I said is in the clip, and then what we're looking for wasn't even in the clip.
We talked to a rival exec, and he mentioned Soto and possible other teams. Let's hear.
But the other day, I had an interesting conversation with a rival executive who's all over the trade market, and he mentioned the name of Juan Soto.
Oh, great. So it's the same clip, There's.
We didn't have the clip.
Well...
If the clip had continued, there was the mention of the Jays and the Padres. But you know what we had also talked about when talking about the clip.
But why did is the point?
Because we didn't want to have the clip too long. That's what I was thinking. Shorter the better. But
yeah, no, I agree with that, Grappler. But
don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
I thought you said, remember Spider? What movie is that?
Oh yeah, you're talking Goodfellas. Yeah.
I thought you said you're Spider right now.
Yeah. That's Christopher Moltisanti, too, The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It's all good, Grappler.
It's all good.
It's all good. All
it's
right.
It's all good.
Got the point across.
That's silliness.
Yeah.
It's not.
Nothing you can do. It happens to the best of us, and we move on.
People have been asking about the lasagna.
We'll
talk about it later.
We'll tell you about the lasagna
next week.
We'll tell you about the lasagna. All right? Rick Tockett still to come. Darren Dreger in studio.
We're going to have that full clip.
Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Rick Tockett will join us in about 10 minutes. The Battle of Alberta goes down tonight. I mean, he would know about the Battle of Pennsylvania. He played for both teams.
Yep.
Right, Philly and Pitt. And that's what's at stake tonight. The first time in over 30 years. Last year, it was Leafs-Habs. First time in over 40 years. Right?
That ended up going the distance and having, obviously, it didn't end well, but
it's not great for the Leafs.
But there's gonna be some juice, man. There is some juice. People just getting boiled outside.
Oh, yeah. The 50-50s in these games are going to be off.
$10 million.
Well, I've been in. Like I've sent money back and going to split it with whoever. Right?
You have to.
They're like $6 million just to
every game.
Every game. Like,
why is the Leafs $17,000?
I don't know, man. We don't do 50-50 in this province. Like, same thing with Jays.
I'll put in the overdrive money. I'll put in overdrive money, and we'll split it all if we win. I'll put it in.
I'd be willing to chip in on that.
You want to chip
in? I won't chip in, but I'll still get in on it.
There you go. Fair enough.
I'll throw 100 to that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hook us up. That'd go over well. Imagine we won the 50-50 in Alberta.
You'd never see me again.
I don't think they like us that much.
Anyway, wouldn't that be hilarious if we won it and we announced, like, if we announced it on the show?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, split it five ways. Those two guys that you're mad at behind the glass right now.
Well, the grappler can get half of what he's supposed to get.
Well, yeah, not the full part because the full clip wasn't there. So you won't get the full part, but you'll get
half of what he gets.
You won't get a full share, but you'll get close to it.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Rick talking coming up, arbitration at 5:30.
I want to hear the clip. I want to hear the
Eventually, we will play the clip. I'm sure we'll.
Like the
we
real
will hear
clip
Toronto and San Diego.
We got the real
We will clip. Hear Buster Olney say Toronto and San Diego. He will say it today on this show. All right?
Yes.
It will happen. Hour two up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.